Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line is Ethan Sachs. Ethan, I think for the first time ever in the history of the podcast, I am not recording from the comfort of my own abode.
I know. I've recorded from multiple different states while you've just been hunkered down, and this week is different. But, you know, like the Postal Service, neither rain nor sleet or whatever, you're not going to be stopped from recording the podcast just from a little internet outage, Ben.
Yeah, this is rough. My internet is out at my apartment, went out yesterday on Saturday. Tech isn't coming till Monday. There's supposed to be a blizzard on Monday. So I am really worried that I'm going to be internetless for an entire week. But right now my worlds are colliding and I am recording at Greenwood High School and bumming off the school's internet. So let's get going.
But also you invested in the podcast a little bit more, right? You got unlimited data so you could use your phone as a hotspot to play MTGO like a fiend?
I did. So I think this shows the true levels of addiction. I got home and my internet was out and I was like really looking forward to streaming. And I was like, oh, what am I going to do with myself? I don't have anything to do. So yeah, was seriously considering getting a hotel room at one point so that I could have internet. And then you were like, why don't you just use your phone? And I only have 1 gigabyte of data. So I sprung for unlimited data and fired up MTGO with my phone's hotspot and jammed some seals last night.
These are the sacrifices we make for you fine listeners out there. Yeah, we are not going to be stopped here from bringing you all this sweet sealed content because, Ben, there was an insane announcement that came out this week from WotC.
Boom. Limited Arena Open. Let's go.
Yeah, super, super pumped. Had a lot of people dropping Twitter messages at us, messages in Discord. As soon as this announcement came out, like, are you guys going to be doing a sealed episode? And yes, we are. So we just immediately switched to jamming draft to jamming sealed so we can bring you as much up-to-date information to get you ready for the open to win that $2,000 on Sunday.
Let's go.
All right, so we'll get a few housekeeping things out of the way. We'll talk about this announcement, and then we'll dive into a bunch of thoughts about Sealed in Kaldheim. So first things first, let's talk about that Patreon page, patreon.com/lordsoflimited is where you can go to give back to the show. If you so choose, of course, the show is always, always, always going to be free, but we got a lot of perks over there. A lot of people trying to get in on the Discord. That's what everyone gets access to if you sign up on the Patreon page. And we are dangerously, dangerously dollars away, mere dollars away from our next stretch goal, Ben, of getting a bonus episode out there each and every month, free of charge to patrons. Super pumped slash very nervous about that, but very, very excited to get that out into the hands of all of our listeners. And of course, each and every week, we're going to be welcoming our new patrons to the fold. So this week, we are welcoming Chris J, William, Chris H, Sergio, Mikhail, Phil, Michael, Kai, Josh, Jacob, Nick, Seth, Jordan, Ben, Adam, Gregory, and Dylan, thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Cannot say thank you enough. Did we get an update on if Ethan's last initial was S last week?
I forgot to check. Yeah, that was sort of like, that was just the craziest intersection of the universe happening last week.
I was just thinking, too, while you read through those names, there's me, Nick, Adam. Nick and Adam are two of my brothers.
Oh, wow.
The Patreon is on spook alert.
That's right.
Show is also brought to you in part now by Channel Fireball, channelfireball.com. Best place to go for anything you need magic related. There's a lot of sweet stuff happening over at Channel Fireball. Top of the list is box breaks for Kaldheim and older sets. So no matter what you're interested in, you can sign up for a box break. That's where you purchase part of a box and then you randomly get a sign, you know, like white, blue, red. I think some of them you can actually specify what color you want. And mine recently kicked off and I have a video waiting for me to see what what happened in my box break. And I'm looking forward to, once I get my internet back, actually checking that out on stream with Twitch chat.
Yeah. I mean, I think you just want black, right? You want to get that sweet, sweet Valky life. That card's like $50 or something.
Sign me up.
Yeah.
Amen.
Yeah, I got mine. I was on green. I'm like halfway through my video. I'm trying to see how many sweet, sweet foreign Klexes I can get my hands on.
Yeah, that'll be nice. In addition to the box break, CFB Pro, you can sign up for $4.99 a month or $9.99. And if you do that, you get $10 back in store credit. So it's essentially free. You, me, Alex, we're all putting out great limited articles. I'm planning to write mine on Sealed to get a little bit deeper of a dive than what we're going to do here on the podcast on the CFB Pro end of things. So if any and all of that is of interest to you, head on over to Channel Fireball. And when you check out over there for anything, please use code LOL when you check out there, all caps, to let them know that we sent you over there. You and I also recently appeared on Scrimy River this past week, yeah?
Yeah, that was super, super fun to be on the podcast with Riley and Dennis. A totally different vibe than what we do over here at Lords Unlimited, but super fun.
I felt very out of my element. You and Riley and Dennis were all just snapping off the one-liners, and I was just felt lumbering along, but it was a blast to be on Scrimy River. If you don't know what that is, it's a quote MTG advice podcast, but pretty much just Dennis and Riley hanging out and making fun of each other and talking nonsense once a week. And it is a blast. My new favorite podcast. So thrilled to be a guest on that. And you can check that out over at Scry Me a River.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's first talk about this announcement for folks who don't know. So next weekend, that's going to be February 20th and 21st. We have the first ever limited arena open. So this is a 2-day tournament. We'll have a link here in our show notes about this tournament, but it's a 2-day event and it's going to be sealed both days. Day one, you can play either best of one or best of three. Day two, it's all best of three. And it costs 22,500 gold or 4,500 gems to enter. And you can enter as many times as you want until you get that max win. So either getting 2-7 wins if you're in best of one or 2-4 wins in best of three. Now it says right now, and we're hoping this is a typo here, but it says right now, so basically it's best of one is how we're used to it, right? Get to 7 wins, great. If not, you get to 3 losses, right? You have 2 losses to give before you're out and you have to re-enter for day one. And best of three, it looks like you can give no losses. So you get to 4 wins, but if you give 1 loss, then that means you're out.
Right, so that might be a typo though, because in the actual best of three queues, you can give 1 win and still get to 4 wins. It seems like 4-1 is much more reasonable than 4-0 if you're mm-hmm. allowed 2 losses in best of one.
Right. So we'll see. With the current setup, I'm planning to do best of one on day one, just because I feel like going 7-2 or 7-1 is easier than 4-0. But if it is 4-1, if you can give 1 loss in the best of three day one queue, then I'll definitely be switching over to that.
Yeah, that would be my plan as well.
And then if you qualify for day two, it's best of three sealed. And it's again, it's a slog. You're trying to get to max 7 wins or 2 losses. So that means you can give 1 loss on day two, but then 2 losses and you're out. And your maximum prizes, if you get to 7 wins, is 2,000 US dollary dues.
Boom, baby.
Yeah, so 6 wins gets you $1,000, 7 wins gets you $2,000, and then there's a bunch of gem payouts for 5 wins or less there. So really, really sweet. And then also the Mythic Championship qualifier in March is Kaldheim Sealed as well. So we've got some high-stakes limited events happening on Arena, Ben. Can you believe it? Like a year ago, we had bot drafts and now we have this.
Yeah, it's crazy exciting to be having high stakes limited tournaments. And worth noting, too, that you can have unlimited rebuys on the first day. So maybe set mm-hmm. yourself a limit on the number of entries based on your budget. It's a little dangerous territory there. And then day two is going to be awesome. It's going to feel like, I don't know, probably day two of a GP, or I guess you're drafting on day two of a GP, just a super high stakes sealed event, probably more high stakes than day one of a GP.
Yeah, more high stakes, but a very similar structure, right? Day one of a GP is 9 rounds, right? It is that potential to go 9-0 now. And I mean, that's not what you're doing here, right? Because it's 7 wins or 2 losses. But it is going to be a slog, I think, for the folks who are getting to 5 wins, 6 wins, 7 wins on day two.
Yeah, from bot drafts a year ago to here is fantastic.
Yeah, so that's the exciting announcement. And that's why we are bringing you our first sealed episode in, I think, since Theros Beyond Death, when we were prepping for GP New Jersey, our first sealed episode since then, because we haven't had an occasion to play sealed since then. But I'm very excited that we do now, and we're going to bring this back. And so we're diving into Kaldheim Sealed, Ben.
Bringing back the limited in Lords of Limited.
That's right. Yeah, not just the Dukes of Draft here. Okay, so I have sort of been using this term, like the sealed spectrum, which is this idea that you want to be on one of two ends of things in Kaldheim Sealed and not in between. You know, Ben, you came up with this phrase. I don't know when you coined this phrase initially, this DBM, don't be mid-range, but that feels very, very true to me about Sealed Kaldheim.
I agree 100%. And worth noting that you and I have pretty much tested separately and not talked a lot prior to recording this episode, and I think have come to a lot of similar conclusions, but I definitely agree. The pools feel split into, actually, the good pools, I should say. You'll split into either you have an aggro deck that is probably white. Like, you can generally, in my experience, look at your white and see, yes, white is playable and I have an aggro deck possibility there, or no, white is largely unplayable, or there are like a couple good white cards that I want to splash. But white is pretty easy to categorize right off the bat. And the other pools, if you don't have an aggro deck, you usually end up being base green, some sort of, you know, multicolor snow deck if you were fortunate enough to open snow duels and fixing. And then if you don't open one of those two pools and you have to be mid-range, it's pretty tough.
Yeah, my first two pools, I think I sort of struggled with this a little bit. Those were where I had like multiple builds, or I played a couple games with one deck and I was like, this isn't really feeling right to me. I'm going to go back and retool. And those were when I think I either thought I had a good enough late game value deck, but it was actually just bad mid range and I should have built aggro, or I thought I had an aggro deck, but it just wasn't quite aggressive enough and it was mid range and I should have built like the greediest value pile I could.
Right. And I think that's something to caution folks. And we'll get into this in the episode a little bit more, but you really need your aggro deck to look like a draft aggro deck for it to be viable and sealed. Like 4-2 drops is just not going to cut it as an aggro deck and sealed. You need to look like a good aggro draft deck.
Well, and so this is a product of how strong a lot of the rares are. How, like, I don't know what the number is, but half of them are just like, you know, must deal with threats, or they warp the state of the game, or they're like huge swings, or there's a ton of these sweepers. You know, when we did our team draft prep and we went through all the rares, there were many rares that we were like, you just can't pass this to the other team. And those can be categorized for sealed as like, you really should try and play this if you possibly can. And so that's backed up by your opportunity to open these dual lands at common. Shimmerdrift Veil exists. There's Replicating Ring. Like, there's a lot of fixing available. So that's why these multicolor greed value piles are so viable. And that's why you should be looking to build that most of the time, I think, because of the power level of your rares. Now, if you don't open powerful rares, and you can do that, then you're going to want to look for like, what's the cheesiest aggro deck I can build? And that's going to, as Ben said, be usually base white, though I have seen them be base red as well. I've had a red green aggro deck when like the best rare I had was Toski, you know, like, and that card actually didn't, it's not really what you want in an aggro deck. A 4-mana 1/1 isn't the thing. But anyway, like that is viable as well. But I think most of the time the rares are going to be the things you want to latch on to.
I agree 100%.
So, you know, we've got some examples here in the show notes of some red white aggro decks that I've had on my Arena best of one runs. I've also got a couple control decks, like an Esper control that had, you know, Doomscar and Turgrid Shadow. I think sweepers are a big deal here in moving you towards, you know, white or black. Four color Kaya. Kaya is another card that I would, you know, really not want to leave on the sidelines in my sealed pool. But the process for building sealed pools in this format has felt the same to me as often. So maybe we want to just give folks our general approach to sealed pools being opened, and especially with opening them on Arena, where it's not the best sealed pool build interface.
Right. So the first thing you want to do, which Arena does for you when you build your pool, is check your rares. So you open those six packs and it's going to flash up the six rares that you open from your packs. You're going to see right off the bat whether or not, you know, you hit the jackpot.
The next thing you probably want to do is, I mean, you can just sort of scroll through each color, right? It sorts them by Wooburg, so you can scroll through and get a sense, but it might be best for you to scroll all the way to the right to see the multicolored cards. So check your uncommon signposts, like what are the things that might pull you into a certain color pair or be incentives to splash. Did you get a Binding the Old Gods or some other sagas or an Igar for blue red, that sort of thing?
Yeah, and this next point I almost might do ahead of the uncommon signposts in Kaldheim because there's so much of it. Mm-hmm. So checking your snow lands, I think when you open your pool, you're immediately hoping to not see snow plains, right? Like if you see two snow plains, that's pretty disheartening.
Yeah.
And I think just in general, you're hoping to see snow duels instead of snow basics, right? The difference between pools that have, you know, five snow duels versus two is pretty large in my experience when you're opening pools. And again, that's largely out of your control, but just worth noting that you should be hoping to open Snowduels. And then the next thing you want to be checking out, and this sort of goes along with those uncommon signposts, but the spell lands, the uncommon cycle of spell lands that are two colored, those are very, very, very good in sealed, much better than they are in draft, I think. And you should be working to include as many of them as humanly possible, I think, without, you know, ruining your mana base.
Right.
And then most importantly here is mana fixing. There is a lot of mana fixing and it's really good. And you really, really, really want to open it. So things like, you know, Horizon Seeker, you know, certainly not great in draft, fine. But I think in sealed, a very good card. That's the 2G 3/2 that has boast for one and a green and lets you search up a basic and put it into your hand. You know, two Horizon Seekers is a reason to try to build a multicolor brew. And I think they're good enough that you can sort of count them the same way you would count Glittering Frost, for example. And I that wasn't apparent to me initially, but I have come up on Horizon Seeker a lot. And then so you're looking for your Glittering Frost that can enchant a land, turn it into a snow land, tap for any color mana. You're looking for Replicating Ring. You're looking for Svella. You're looking for all of those different ways to search up basics like Path to the World Tree or Spirit of the Alderguard. You know, identifying those things. And if you get, you know, two or three of those, I would pretty much be locking in multicolor good stuff, assuming you have other good cards to support them.
Right. That's sort of the key is you need both parts. You need the cards that are powerful enough to warrant doing the multicolor greed pile, and then you need the enablers. So I think it's why green-based value decks are probably the best decks in sealed, and then, you know, that's the other end of the spectrum is these red or white-based aggro decks. When you're building these multicolor greed piles, I've had a lot of folks, you know, when I'm building these decks on stream, feeling intimidated by the mana bases, you really want to make sure you're thinking of the deck as a base two color deck. So your green, blue, splashing red, white, and black, your green, black, splashing red, white, and blue, right? Whatever that is, but whatever those base two colors are, and making sure you have eight-ish, seven at a minimum sources for those base two colors. And especially if you're relying on green for a lot of the fixing that Ben mentioned, the Glittering Frost, the Horizon Seeker, the Path to the World Tree, then you want to make sure you're bumping up green a little bit because, you know, you're trying to enable green mana for those splashes so that then you can count Glittering Frost and Path and Seeker as one of every other color, that sort of thing.
Right. And I think, you know, once you've checked all of that stuff, you're going next into individual colors, right? And you're looking at white. And generally for me, white has been easy to dismiss for the most part, unless
yes.
I was looking to build an aggro deck. And then, you know, each of those four remaining colors, you're seeing which are the deepest and which, as a result of being the deepest and, you know, have the most good cards to pull you in, are going to end up being your base two colors.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, just as far as general sealed advice, you know, after you've done all of this stuff, you've checked your rares, you've checked your uncommons, you've checked the fixing that's available to you. For call time, my priority would be, do I have the incentives and the fixing to build a multicolor control deck? If yes, that would be my first go-to. If the answer to that question is no, then I'd be shifting, you know, this is like a little wordy flow chart here. If no,
yeah,
then I'm trying to build an aggro deck. Do I have the curve and the creatures and the equipment to build an aggro deck? And if the answer to that's yes, then my next stop would be building a good aggro deck. And I think if I don't feel like I have the tools to either, you know, build a multicolor good stuff deck or an aggressive deck, then I'm looking at what's the best two color deck I can come up with.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you want to just build the best deck that your six packs can provide you. And hopefully it's on one of the two ends of the spectrum. If not, obviously, you're going to have to build a mid-range deck. And the mid-range deck can beat the aggro decks. But as you progress in a tournament or, you know, with your wins or whatever, you're going to start facing those multicolor greed value pile decks, and mid-range decks just fold to those decks most of the time.
But I will say, you know, if you're building that Uber, to borrow from Limited Resources, Uber end game ramp deck or whatever, and you're going full greed, you have to put defensive speed in your deck because there are some darn good aggro decks running around as well.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we're not saying you can like ignore your curve or do nothing until turn four, that type of deal. That's definitely not how these best decks are going to function.
All right. So just diving into some Kaldheim specifics here. What's changing in sealed?
So some color shifts are happening. Like I said, I think green is probably the best color in sealed, or like the color that I think is the base of the best decks out there. And then in terms of some color shifts elsewhere, I think blue takes the biggest hit of the colors from draft to sealed. It's definitely still playable, but it doesn't provide removal or good removal, right? Like, I'm not excited about Bind the Monster or Mists of Lit Yara or Ravenform even. I think like because two for ones feels so important to me, you know, Ravenform, yeah, it deals with stuff and I'm happy to side it in if I see one of those like, you know, god equipment creatures and I need to deal with an artifact or whatever. But just recognize that a 1/1 flyer is still a real thing. It's like half a card, 2/3 of a card or whatever.
Yes, I was initially a little higher on Ravenform and Sealed and I've since course corrected and come down on it. But I do think, you know, there are still, we're not saying blue is unplayable by any stretch. There are still some good cards in blue. You know, Behold the Multiverse is insane. And even if your blue's not deep, you should actively be looking to splash Behold the Multiverse. Same thing for Glimpse. You know, Dig Through Time is insane. You know, if you've got changelings to enable it, you know, even if you don't have the actual giants. So be on the lookout for those. Bergstrider is great if you're playing your snowlands. I think one of the things, you know, you said this before we started recording, but blue feels dependent on being able to play the snow stuff, the snow lands that you opened and getting a replicating ring or getting a glittering frost, that type of thing.
Right. Blue's best things beyond the raw card advantage from Behold and Glimpse are Bergstrider, Icebind Pillar, and Avalanche Caller, I think. And all of those are dependent on you being able to enable them enough with your snow mana. And that's just sort of a luck of the draw type deal. And obviously Mistwalker and Augury Raven are just good evasive threats, but they are by no means things that incentivize me to play blue when I'm looking at my sealed pool.
Right. I will say Icebind Pillar has been absolutely absurd in sealed.
Yes, I really, really agree. I mean, and this is sort of, it leads to why I think, well, Masked Vandal is insane, but also why we're proponents, I think, of main decking Broken Wings and Invoke the Divine.
Yep.
The other shift I've seen is that black gets a whole lot better in sealed. It's one of the best colors in sealed. I've often been base green black and then, you know, splashing other powerful things, you know, Feed the Serpent, Turgid Shadow, Poison the Cup. So you just get like the rock solid removal, Turgid Shadow as sort of like a mini sweeper or a wrath adjacent effect that you get at uncommon is great. You get all the two for ones with Skull Raid and Elderfang Disciple, even Draugr Recruiter as the 4-mana 3/3 with the boast 4 mana to rebuy a creature. Like any of those like boasty creatures that threaten two for ones, like Tuskiri Firewalker or Horizon Seeker, like you're just looking for two for ones all over the place. And black just gets a whole lot better in sealed.
Right. All those removal spells that feel a little clunky in draft are just insanely good in sealed. And Feed Exiling is also very relevant in sealed.
Can we check in here just real quick on black in Kaldheim in general? Because there's a lot of talk out there, I think perhaps leading the charge are Ryan Sachs and Alex Nikolic about black just like not being good in Kaldheim Limited. And that has not been my experience.
That's not been my experience particularly either. I think it's tied with white as the two weakest colors, but they're both very playable. I've come up on white quite a bit since, you know, drafting a lot more red-white aggro, figuring out gold vein pick. You know, we talked about that last week and I hadn't played with it a ton and I've played with it more. I'm a believer in the card now and I'm a believer in aggro in the format. So white has come up for me and I agree. I don't think black's insane, but I certainly don't think it's unplayable.
Okay. All right. Well, that's interesting to see how that's starting to shake out here a few weeks deep.
We've talked a lot about two for ones already, but just want to hammer that point home. Anything that provides value is very, very important in Kaldheim Sealed. So even dipping into, you know, past good cards like Skull Raid and Turgrid Shadow to Scary Firewalker as the 2 in a red 3/2 that can, you know, boast exile a card that you can play that turn, Horizon Seeker boasting and getting you lands, that sort of thing, all really, really adds up over the course of a game of Sealed. I found the games to play out as pretty grindy, attrition-based, but also with some sort of an element of tempo to them, right? Like while you're accruing that advantage, there comes a point where one person pulls ahead enough that they can just kind of slam the door closed. You know, whether it's, you know, having foretold a couple cards and then having a big turn where they triple spell with foretold cards or whatever. But there is an element of tempo to them as well. So speaking of, have you been choosing play or draw?
I have been mostly playing best of one. And so you don't get to choose. Like it just happens for you. The few best of three queues that I did, I chose to play. I don't think you can choose to draw in sealed. That just seems like a mistake to me.
Right. I've been choosing to play in the dark. But then once I know it's a grindy matchup, I have been choosing to draw.
Right. And that's something to think about. Like play draw does matter a lot, especially in terms of how you're going to sideboard. So if you know you're going to be on the draw or the play, then you may be more or less incentivized to swap decks to go like, well, if I'm going to be on the play and I know my opponent has a good late game deck as well, maybe I just try and cheese him out with my aggro deck in game two or in game three because I know I'm going to be on the play. So that thinking about that should influence your decisions when you're figuring out what to do post board.
Right. And so we should just take a second, I think, to talk about that with regard to the arena deck building interface. So on MTGO, you can save multiple decks or, you know, at a GP, you can have another deck sleeved up. That's not going to be the case on arena. So if you feel like your pool supports multiple builds, and I think, you know, default would be trying to build the most aggressive thing you can and the most controlling thing you can, you should build all of those decks, assuming you have time. It's an unlimited time deck builder, right? Because the event's asynchronous.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, it seems like it would be true to me. We didn't really talk about that when we were going through the event, but theoretically, you can play this at your leisure over the course of the day. Generally, they encourage you to start earlier so that you can always be guaranteed to find a match, but you should screenshot multiple decks. And I would even go so far as to, you know, maybe join a best of three sealed and practice deck swapping so that the first time you're not trying to swap decks on the arena sealed interface is that day of the sealed open and when you're playing best of three for the first time. It's more awkward than you would think. So just having those screenshots up and knowing exactly what you want to do.
Yeah, it's really clunky. And you only have like, whatever, two minutes and change to do so. Like I did that in a few of my best of threes, just like, oops, I got to switch to my red black aggro deck and just like clicking out every single card from my pool and then finding the other deck and then also adding the lands. It's tough. Even for someone like me who like is playing arena, whatever, 6 hours a day. One last point about the 2-for-1s that we were talking about, or just like how much value you should be aware of trying to cram into your deck. You want to make sure that you're making up for the sort of do nothing cards that you're playing that fix your mana, like Glittering Frost or Replicating Ring, because like, you know, you're often gonna have a lot of mana sources in these decks. I found myself in these greed piles to be playing 18 lands a lot of the time, in addition to my cards in my deck that also are dedicated to mana, like Path or Frost or Ring, just because I need sources, or I'm trying to play on my snow lands, or I'm trying to play a couple spell lands, like whatever that is, I have a lot of mana sources in the deck. And so then you need stuff that is just like raw card advantage, or maybe even just a Pilfering Hawk to like rummage through your deck so that you don't flood out.
Right. I found the filtering to be very important. Pilfering Hawk, Seize the Spoils, any of that type of stuff you want to include in the multicolored pile decks.
Yeah, Seize the Spoils also, like, that's just such a house and sealed when you're base red control.
In addition to 2-for-1s, you also want to be really aware of playing cards that are going to get outclassed quickly. And this is, you know, I think not in the aggro deck vein,
right?
Because in aggro, you're going to be trying to play a critical mass of those cards to overwhelm your opponent. But in the mid range, or certainly in the control end of things, you want your stuff to have value in the late game. So things like Immersturm Raider, you know, the 1 in a red 2/1 that lets you rummage, maybe you're okay with that because it gets you the rummage, but a 2/1 is generally going to be irrelevant in a game of sealed, especially in any kind of a mid-range or control matchup. You know, something like Jaspera Sentinel, the green 1/2 with reach that can tap to add a mana of any color when you tap another creature. That's not worth a card generally, despite my espousing of it being Mox Diamond. Certainly in sealed, that's definitely not true. Something like Deathknell Berserker, the 1 in a black 2/2, or any of the like 2/2 with upside type cards,
right?
Just go down a bit in sealed,
right? Because the more you put those in decks that are quote unquote controlling, the more dangerous you get to that mid-range territory when you're like, oh yeah, but maybe I just have like these cards as like defensive speed. But then like you want your 2-drops to matter when you top deck them, if at all possible. And stuff like Raider. I mean, Raider actually, it maybe matters because it can rummage you. But, you know, generally, I think these things that are going to get outclassed or don't matter in the mid to late game are cards you want to be aware of not including.
Right. The bar for what is worth a card in sealed is a lot higher than it is in draft because you generally have less focused synergy. So assuming Deathknell Berserker is not in, you know, a black aggressive deck that has equipment to pump it and turn it into a 3/3 or whatever, if you're just putting that in your deck for some defensive speed, like how often is that going to be worth a card in your game? And the answer is not very.
Right. I will say on, I don't know where this falls in the spectrum thing, but keyword big is a very real way to win. And maybe this is just a third kind of deck to look for, but like Grizzled Outrider, Lindworm, Cinderheart Giant, all these like 5/5, 6/6 bodies feel really tough to deal with.
I have experienced that as well. Lindworm is a house in Sealed.
Yeah, it really, really is. I mean, that feels like, I mean, not that that's good enough for your incentive to play like base green control, but just be aware that like, if you just see that and that may be your best game plan, try and support that as best you can. And I think that will be a good strategy as well.
One of the things I've encountered, and I'm sure you have as well, the uncommon living weapons are incredible in Sealed. And it's also probably making me believe that I've been undervaluing them in draft as well. Like I saw Ari Lax at the beginning of the format in the Lords of Limited Discord. He was espousing the Dwarven Hammer as the best red uncommon. And I was like, nah, that's crazy. You know, the Basalt Ravager, whatever. I thought that to myself in my head. And I think he's probably right now, just after playing more with Dwarven Hammer, that card is nuts. And I think in Sealed, that effect that those uncommon equipment have on the course of a game is just more pronounced because the games go longer. So all of a sudden, you know, then, you know, if you have Draugr's Helm, which is the black one that gives +2/+2 in menace for equip 4, your Death Knell Berserker that you were forced to include for defensive speed or whatever becomes a real threat when you put Draugr's Helm on it, and you're going to have time to put Draugr's Helm on your cards in a game of Sealed.
Exactly. That's what I mean. It just turns everything you have into a bigger threat, and it's a mana sink for you in the late game. It's so, so strong. I agree. I think all of them are great. Even the white one has just like blown me out. Like just because things go late and then my opponent drops this 6/5 flying vigilance.
And then every other creature is larger for the rest of the game as well.
Exactly. Yeah,
they're all incredible. And I think just equipment in general as well. Raven's Wings is very good. I think, you know, especially if you don't get any of that uncommon living weapon equipment, I would be careful of noting what your creature count is if you're going to play Raven's Wings. Like certainly not in a 10 creature deck, and there are a lot of 10 creature decks in Kaldheim Sealed, but if you're up in the normal 15-16 creature range, Raven's Wings can do a lot of work. I think Goldvein Pick as well. You know, if you open a pool that has 2 or 3 Goldvein Picks and you've got a good curve and you're playing aggro, don't be afraid to build the Goldvein Pick aggro deck.
Yeah, I agree. But I think creature count, which is a point I have a little lower down here in our show notes, creature count is really important to think about. And also don't be thinking about Goldvein Pick as fixing in your control decks, because those control decks are not like, when you think about Goldvein Pick as fixing, you have to be thinking about connecting with a creature in combat and how often is that happening in your low creature count decks. And it's just not going to happen that much. So just be aware of your creature count for things like Raise the Draugr, if you have vehicles, if you have combat tricks, equipment that doesn't make creatures way down. Like there's a lot of cards that want you to have high creature counts that may look appealing, but you really need to think about the composition of your deck and how it's going to play out.
In addition to uncommons, you know, speaking of uncommons that get better, the uncommon spell lands, we already talked about it, but we only touched on it briefly. If you get one of the pools that has the multicolored fixing, you just jam every uncommon spell land you get in your deck, I think. And they're very, very, very good. And especially the ones like Litjara Mirror Lake that get you a creature, or the blue-white one that draw you 2 cards. But I think if you can support the uncommon spell lands with your mana base without stretching your mana, you should make an effort to put them in your deck.
I agree. I think, I mean, especially if they're your base colors, like if you're playing the Bredegarde Stronghold, that's the green white one, but white is like just a light splash, but your base green, then it doesn't hurt that much to play a green tap land that maybe eventually late in the game, once you've assembled your Glittering Frost and gotten your Snow Tap Duel, it's like, oh, now I have 2 white sources and I can use this. When it's the base color is off color, that's when you want to be a little more cautious of including it in your deck, I think.
I agree.
There are a lot of Wraths running around, Ben. Don't overcommit to the board. And I think this is a huge edge to be gained, especially if you're playing in best of one. Like, I think just really having cards like Doomscar and Turgrid Shadow and Blood on the Snow a little less because it's 6 mana, but those things that can be fired off early, you really want to think about, like, if your opponent is playing weird or just like foretelling, like maybe you don't need to play that third creature into Doomscar or whatever. Like, think about how much you need to commit to the board versus how far ahead on board you are. Like, there's a lot of edges to be gained if you can think about those Wraths.
I think even something about in deck construction as well. You know, if you're playing against a Wrath and you have a deck that, you know, has the ability to play without committing a lot of threats to the board, you know, worth thinking about trying to side into that deck, maybe versus your aggro deck that is just going to fold as soon as your opponent casts Doomscar or whatever.
Yeah, we talked about this just briefly, but again, mana count I think can be varied, but as we've said, for the multicolor draft decks, I would not be shy about 18 lands, even if you have other cards that are mana sources as well. I get a general sense from Twitch chat and their suggestions about cutting lands that people are interested in going lower on lands than I am on average. And I think you should not be shy about running a lot of mana sources in sealed.
Well, especially if you've got one or two spell lands. And I think most sealed pools will have that. Also, you know, we've talked a lot about building this multicolored splash deck. So maybe just a quick review on numbers of sources that you want. If you're splashing one card of a splash color, you need three sources. And so that could be as simple as, you know, if you're splashing a red card, you have one mountain, you have Path of the World Tree to search up that mountain, and you have a Glittering Frost. Like, that would be your three sources. And you can even get greedy with, you know, treasures or a Horizon Seeker that's not necessarily the most consistent, but anything that's going to produce mana of that color, whether it's a one shot or multiple, can theoretically be counted as a source. Once you're splashing two cards, let's say you want to put two red cards in your blue-green deck, you need four sources. Three cards, you want five sources. And even when you're in the three cards, five sources territory, you're dangerously close to not splashing anymore.
Yeah, for sure. Just really be building responsible mana bases, thinking about the base two colors and then thinking about that splash scale and thinking about stuff that is worth splashing, whether it's just raw power or it's shoring up a hole in your deck or it's enabling, you know, multiple things. Like, well, if I play black now, that enables this removal splash and also enables the potential to pop this spell land. Like, those sorts of things add up as well.
Right. And I think, you know, someone tweeted at me or both of us, I don't remember, but whether or not they should play Coma in their sealed build. Like, and they had a couple ways to turn it on that were clunky, but, you know, like Savella is eventually going to get there. Replicating Ring is eventually going to get there. And they had, I think, one Glittering Frost or something. You're stretching for cards of that power level, and you can even break those splash rules, I think, depending on the power level of the card that you're trying to cast.
Right. I mean, yeah, if you're green, blue, and you open a Kaya, like, Kaya should be in your deck 100% of the time. Coma, even if it's a stretch as a double splash as a seven drop, like, that card should not be on the sidelines of any base blue or green deck. Yeah, a couple wombo combos here you want to look out for in sealed. What's going on?
Yeah, so these are some wombo combos that I've just encountered, you know, through playing games of sealed. Master Skull is the first one that comes to mind. This goes way up in value from draft. The 4/4 body is just a great stat line. And if you're rebuying anything, it feels very good. If you're rebuying, you know, something powerful like the green black saga or the green white saga, that's a removal spell, it's borderline busted. And then, you know, I've also run into situations where, you know, maybe I've blown up my opponent's Runed Crown with a Broken Wings, you know, thinking, dealt with their Runed Crown. And then they Master Skull back the Runed Crown, cast the Runed Crown, get the rune out of their graveyard, and I'm back in the same spot I was, except they have a 4/4 and they drew a card off their rune again, you know?
Yeah. Did you see my post on Twitter about assembling Gifts Ungiven on Burial Rites in Limited?
I did. That was nuts.
So I cast the mythic demon that lets you pull two cards out of your library, and then your opponent picks one to go into your hand and the other goes in your graveyard. And the two cards I found were Master Scald and Cardor's Vicious Return. So either they give me Return and then I get back Master Scald to assemble that wombo combo, or they give me Scald and I just rebuy the Saga right away and play it. Like, that felt insane. Master Scald is wildly good.
Yeah. And you can even go really deep in Abzan colors. You know, maybe you're getting Raise the Draugr back on your Master Scald. There's a lot of sweet stuff you can do with Master Scald in the format.
Yeah, a lot of nice loop de loops there. You're like in Black Rune and Equipment and First Strike on blocks. Love that.
Yeah, it's really, really powerful on defense, or also, you know, the Black Rune on Hoggy Mob, or, you know, Black Rune on the Equipment on the Hoggy Mob. That's worth, I think, looking out for in your sealed pool and worth playing if you get there. And then a really sweet one from Lords of Limited Discord, credit to Flying from our Lords of Limited Discord. We were talking about sealed pools, and they suggested a Litjara Mirror Lake, which is the blue tapped land that can sacrifice to make a copy of a creature, plus Shepherd of the Cosmos, which is the 3/3 that when it ETBs, you can return a permanent CMC2 or less. So you can loop Shepherd of the Cosmos and Litjara Mirror Lake to get infinite 3/3 flyers over the course of multiple turns.
They're 4/4 flyers, actually, right? Because Mirror Lake puts a counter on that creature.
Oh, excuse me. 4/4 flyers, even better.
Yeah, yeah. A 3/3 flyer I wasn't sold on, but 4/4, now that I can get behind. Yeah, those are sweet. Those little pockets of synergy, right? Because as Ben alluded to earlier, he said, like, your sealed decks aren't going to have these, like, big synergistic things. You're not going to get a blue-red Giants deck unless you're a Maz, who I faced the other day with just, like, a pre-con Giants deck in sealed. It was ridiculous. But most of the time, you're not going to have those sort of streamlined decks. So you want to look out for those little pockets of synergy that you can assemble, like, oof, Mirror Lake plus Shepherd.
And, you know, we've been talking a lot about, you know, building aggro or building multicolor. Worth noting that, like, if you get an insane two-color deck that looks like a draft deck, it's going to be a good sealed deck, and you should play it.
Yeah, I just don't. I mean, at least in my experience, I've done about a dozen sealeds. I have not found that deck. Like, if I have a streamlined two color deck, it's aggressive, is what I've found so far.
I have had elves once, which was pretty sweet.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
All right. So that takes us to some individual cards that just get a lot better in sealed, and just talk about them and why. Mm-hmm. So Frostpeak Yeti, I think, is first on the list. The 3/3 that can become unblockable with one and a snow activated ability. It's way, 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 way better in sealed because it's a real threat. It's a card that has to be dealt with. The games frequently go long. You know, you're going to have enough mana to activate the ability. I think it just demands an answer, and you should be, I think, not necessarily, it's not a pull to blue or anything, but if you're playing blue and you're playing snow, I think you should be looking to include Frostpeak Yeti.
Right. And I think those things like chain reaction, like, you know, if I'm playing blue, it's probably because I've got the snow to support the reasons to play blue, and then I can enable my Yeti as well. Broken Wings and Invoke the Divine, we've talked about already. I mean, everyone should just be playing a lot of their equipment, right? Like, we've talked about how good the living weapon equipment is, even playing Raven Wings or Gold Vein Pick or Tormentor's Helm, whatever, enchantment based removal like Bound in Gold. You're just going to find targets for this in sealed.
Right. And, you know, I don't know that we hammered the point home, but for me, I don't know how you feel about it, but like, Draugr's Helm is a reason to play black. Like, I'm looking to play black in sealed if I have a Draugr's Helm, or if I have a Dwarven Hammer, I want to play red. Like, those are borderline bomb status to me in sealed.
Well, and it's so interesting. It feels almost random. Like, the black one is black, black, but Hammer is single red, right? If you want to kick it and attach a dwarf to it. And so, like, it's weird because, like, Hammer feels splashable, whereas Helm doesn't. But anyway, that's just like an interesting little design thing there. But yeah, Hammer is just ridiculous.
Yeah. Next up, Ceruleth's Packmate is on this list. Ethan was like, how do you know this is better in sealed than it is in draft? And my answer was my despair level when my opponent casts Ceruleth's Packmate in sealed. It's so backbreaking, it's so good, and you really, really want a couple of these in your sealed pool.
Yeah, similarly, Behold the Multiverse, really, really good. Just that raw 2-for-1. I mean, even 2-for-1 plus because of the Scry 2.
Yeah, and we've talked about a couple of these already. Raise the Draugr, Horizon Seeker. Masked Vandal is up next, baby. 1 and a green, 1/3 changeling. And when you cast it, you can exile a creature from your graveyard to exile target artifact or enchantment. I know I was hot and bothered by this card in draft. It's everything you want in sealed also, because it's defensive speed against the aggro decks.
Right.
And it's also super relevant against the control decks. You should be playing every single copy of this card that you have if you're base green.
Amen. We talked about Master Scald. We talked about Shepherd of the Cosmos being sweet as another 2-for-1. I've splashed Shepherd of the Cosmos as well in my decks as a wombo combo with Priest of the Haunted Edge, just because the foretell cost is single white on Shepherd. And so it is a nice splashable card.
Yep. I think that is one of the most frequent white splashes. I've been really impressed by anything with flying as well. You know, it's felt like, you know, you can, I know we say it all the time, flying's been limited, shocker, but it really does hold up, I think, in Kaldheim sealed. You know, Augury Raven, I think, is a good bit better in sealed than it is in draft.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. Disdainful Stroke, I mean, you know, the powerful stuff in this format costs 4 mana or more, and this is a nice, nice cheap interactive spell for sure.
Right. So Disdainful Stroke, I don't think, is quite good enough to pull you into blue. It's borderline, I think, good enough to think about splashing if you have good mana to support it. And I think if you're playing blue, you should be playing every copy of Disdainful Stroke that you have.
Wow. Okay. All right. I was thinking, like, all right, well, how many do you play? Like, I would say you definitely want the first copy if you're base blue, but you're just saying don't leave any on the sidelines.
I don't think so. I guess if you're sideboarding, maybe, but
sure,
it's really only dead against the aggro decks, and it's really good. You know, even something as simple as you have it up and you counter your opponent's Ceruleth's Packmate that they're trying to cast on turn 3. There just are always targets for it.
Mm-hmm. We talked about Turgid Shadow already, the 3 black-black foretell, 2 black-black instant, each player sacrifices 2 creatures. It's just absolutely insane. A huge pull into black, very strong and sealed.
Finn the Fangbearer is up next. 1 and a green, 1/3 death touch. And whenever a creature you control with death touch deals damage to an opponent, they get 2 poison counters. If they get 10, they lose the game. This has been a gigantic problem for me in sealed. And I think it's just a great card, right? Because, you know, it's a brick wall against the aggro decks. And then similarly against the control decks, your 2-drop's relevant, right? It's pressuring them because they're getting poison counters. And eventually they're going to have to trade some relevant card for it. It's just good on all ends of the spectrum. I think it's very good in sealed.
Similar to like Frostpeak Yeti or something, like Yara Glade Warden. This is the 4 mana 3/3 changeling. You pay 2 and a green. Tap, exile a creature from your graveyard to put 2 +1/+1 counters on a creature you control at sorcery speed. this feels, again, like all of these, like, you know, 2-for-1-y accrue value cards. They just get better and sealed. And this feels like a must deal with threat when you see it on the other side of the battlefield.
Rootless U is next, also 3GG for the 5/4. This card is terrifying and sealed. And the fact that it's a little slower, I think, you know, is mitigated by the fact that you're playing sealed. And when your opponent casts this and you're wondering, like, can I afford to trade with it? Are they going to go find Coma? You know, are they going to go find Burning Rune Demon? Like, there's just a lot more possibilities for bad things, I think, that your opponent can get off of a Rootless U.
Well, and the other thing is, when I see it in my sealed pool and I'm base green, I'm actively looking for something to find. Like, if I don't get any Lindworms in my deck, then I'm like, all right, well, maybe I splash this Dread Knight in black, or maybe I splash this 3/6 Vigilance in white. You know, like, I want to be able to get that 2-for-1, and it's not that difficult if I have the mana fixing to support it.
Lastly, Snakeskin Veil here. Just be aware, if you're playing best of three, I think this card can do some serious work out of the sideboard. You know, if your opponent's got a lot of Demon Bolts, a lot of stuff of that nature, you know, some Feed the Serpent, that sort of thing, and you want creatures and you have creatures that need protecting, can do some serious work coming out of the board.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to do something pretty cool here for the last little stretch of the episode. We're going to do a sealed pool build exercise on the podcast. And we recognize that most folks will probably just listen along here, but we will include a 17 lands link in the place where you download the show. And at the bottom of that link, you can export the list as a text file and then pop it into either MTGO or Arena. And you could pause the episode right now and see what you would do and try and build a deck out of this pool. And then we'll talk through the thought process that I had when I faced this pool, and you can see where we lined up, or if you build something different. I think it's an interesting thing that we get to do now that that text file exists. But here we're going to dive in, Ben, and go through our steps of building the sealed pool.
Yeah, so step one, what rares did we open? First up, we've got Redain, God of the Worthy, and Valkmira Protector's Shield. That's the 2/3 flyer that messes with your opponent's snow lands and makes their expensive spells cost more. And then the shield on the other side that prevents one damage to you and creatures you control, or makes your opponent's spells, they have to pay one when they target your stuff.
Got another god here, Turgrid, God of Fright, the 3BB 4/5 menace. On the other side, you're almost always playing this as the Lantern if you can. The 3 and a black artifact, tap, target player loses 3 life unless they sack a non-land permanent or discard a card. You can pay 3 and a black to untap it. This is a house in sealed.
I cast Turgrid because I had Turgrid Shadow in a sealed pool. That is a spicy combo. So you get the two creatures that your opponent sacrifices if you land that.
I cast Turgrid when my opponent's Saga was about to pop off, because you sacrifice Sagas and then I get it back on my side of the battlefield.
Nice, nice. Yeah, there's a lot going on with Turgrid. Next up, we've got Arnie Brokenbow. That's the 2 and a red 3/3 that you can pay one to have it get power equal to 1+ the greatest power on the battlefield.
Yeah, only until end of turn. I thought it was permanent. That card is a stinker. Realmwalker, 2 and a green 2/3 shapeshifter changeling. Enters the battlefield, you choose a creature type, and you can look at the top card of your library anytime and cast creature spells of the chosen type from the top of your library.
Yeah, not great and sealed unless you've got a lot of changelings running around.
Yeah.
Bloodsky Massacre, that's the black-red saga that makes a 2/3 berserker, and then when demon berserkers attack, you draw a card and lose a life. I have no idea what the third chapter does.
You just add red for each berserker you have, and that you don't lose that mana as steps and phases end.
Ah, okay.
And our last rare is Henjigit Pathway, which is the blue-white rare flip land. So white god, black god, hasty red creature, green changeling, black-red saga, and blue-white land. Kind of a mishmash of stuff, right? Nothing that goes like, ooh, we've got some overlap here. Gonna hope that our colors support that, right? We just got, like, you know, the gods are very good, and beyond that, nothing exciting.
Right. So that's my thought when looking at those rares, is I definitely want to play Turgrid if at all possible, and would be hoping to play Redain as well.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Especially because, I mean, when you play Redain, you're hoping to play the flip side, I think. Valkmira Protector Shield, it just like hoses some strategies and also is still just very good. It just trips people up a lot. Like when you face this card, you want to make sure you have like auto assign damage off so that you can deal excess damage to stuff. I've had many people like attack their 3-power thing into my 1/1 and my 2/2, and they try and deal 1 and 2, and then neither of my things die and their creature dies, you know?
Right.
So next up, we want to look at our fixing, and we actually have a good bit. So we've got 4 snow duels: black red, black white, blue green, and red green. We've got the blue white rare land that we talked about, And we got a Shimmerdrift Vale. So that's a lot of good lands there.
Right. So that's the jackpot as far as lands go in your sealed pools. There's two Jaspera Sentinels, which I think you're generally hoping to not play in, except in case of emergency, in sealed.
We've got a Glittering Frost, right? So we didn't get much in the way of green fixing, but one Glittering Frost can go a long way.
One Glittering Frost does go a long way. And then there's also a Seize the Spoils, you know, to filter and make a treasure token. So again, you know, maybe if you're base red-green, you can use that, you know, for fixing. One more note a bit about Seize the Spoils real quick. I think if you have those filtering type effects, you can also afford, I think, to be a little greedier with your splashes, because you could always, worst case scenario, splash the card you can't cast to your Seize the Spoils.
Right, yeah, you can just pitch that for sure. That's a good point there as well. So we've looked at our quote-unquote bombs and our rares. We've looked at our fixing. Let's check out the removal suite that we have in each color.
In white, we've got Bound in Gold and Invoke the Divine.
In blue, we have Icebind Pillar, and we do have some Snowlands to support that, and Raven Form. But like we said, I think we're hoping to not play Raven Form main deck in sealed.
In black, we've got a Poison the Cup and Priest of the Haunted Edge. Poison the Cup, I think, is another card you're hoping makes it into your deck no matter what.
Right. And is quite splashable, remember, because the Foretell cost is single black. Demon Bolt and Provoke the Trolls in red. Demon Bolt, I'm excited about. Provoke the Trolls, not so much.
So right now, just based on what we've talked about so far, I'm sort of brewing up almost a Grixis snow deck in my head. You know, because we've got some of those snow duels that are Grixis colored. We've got, you know, some black-red cards we're definitely incentivized to play that would let us play the Black-Red Saga. Maybe we splash an Icebind Pillar. That's just tentatively where I'm at right now.
Nice, nice, nice. Good to get that check-in.
In green, we've got three times Broken Wings. And I think, you know, I'd be happy playing the first for sure. Maybe the second. Would probably not main deck three of them.
Right. And then lastly, looking at our gold cards, we do have a Binding the Old Gods, the Black-Green Saga.
Okay, and so seeing that there and knowing we have the Glittering Frost, I think my ears are perking up and I'm thinking we're some sort of base green multicolored deck at this point that is probably not playing white, or maybe we're playing Redain only from white.
And so if you look at the pool in general in terms of color depth, most of the cards are in green and white, though most of white cards are bad, which is kind of a theme for sealed, or that they're like aggressively slanted and there's nothing really to pair with that. But also white can sort of have that, you know, split personality thing where it's like half the cards are defensive, half are aggressive here in sealed, and that dilutes both game plans. But green gives us a lot. It gives us, we have two Elven Bows. That's the aforementioned living weapon equipment. And bows, I think, are really good in sealed. We also have two Rune of Might. That's the green rune that gives +1/+1 and trample. So slapping a rune on a bow is really nice. And we have three Icehide Trolls. And we talked about Frostpeak Yeti just being like a way to win at common in these snow decks. And trolls are absolutely that as well.
Right. And we have those four snow duels, and we have the Glittering Frost turn another land into a snow land. So looking like base green multicolored is rife with opportunity here.
Mm-hmm. Black is giving us not a lot. We have the Poison the Cup, we have Priest of the Haunted Edge, and Turgrid as our rare god. And past that, it's just pretty shallow in terms of the amount of cards we even have to work with. You can see it's that we have the least amount of black cards in the pool altogether.
And then in blue, we've got two Bergstriders, which again are splash worthy, I think, in sealed, assuming you have the fixing to support it. Like, I would not be going out of my way to try to splash them, but if I've got, you know, the cards like Glittering Frost and I've got the duels, sure, I'll play some Bergstriders. And then Icebind Pillar is a card that I would go way, 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 way out of my way to try to play and splash.
Yeah, absolutely. So with all of that in mind, we can see if you click on that link, you can see if you look at deck there, go beyond the pool, you can see the deck that I built, the final build. When I decided, as you said, for heavy green, and actually went with, you know, we're really just green splashing everything, but green black is the base that I decided on. So like I said, black is shallow, but it does give me Turgrid, Binding the Old Gods, Poison the Cup, Priest of the Haunted Edge. I am playing because I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I'm playing all 7 of my snow lands plus Glittering Frost. So I think Priest is actually quite good here. And Elderfang Disciple is another good, just like speed bump, 2-for-1, 2 drop.
Yeah, and worth noting, I'm just looking at the pool right now. There are no uncommon lands in this pool.
Yeah, I didn't get any spell lands, but I would have been able to play probably any that I found. Like, my fixing is not that bad, especially because Binding the Old Gods gets to search up. I have Highland Forest and Rhymewood Falls, so I have a red, green, and a green, blue land that Binding can find, so Binding is a little bit of fixing as well. And then in terms of the splashes, a bit of an aggressive blue splash here in Icebind Pillar and two Burgstriders, but again, we're playing all seven snowlands plus the Glittering Frost plus Binding can find up two snowlands. So I felt like we could enable the snow on all those cards pretty reliably.
Yeah, I think that seems super reasonable to me.
Yeah, and then a little red splash with Demon Bolt and Basalt Ravager and a little white splash for Redain. So, you know, going the full five colors here, Ben.
So let me ask you this. I was just looking in the pool to see if you had a Master Scald, which you do not.
Yeah.
If you had a Master Scald in this pool, would you be interested in splashing it in this deck?
100%, right? Because not like the dream is to get back Binding, but if they happen to blow up Pillar, I can get that back. If they happen to deal with my Elven Bows, I can get that back. If I throw a Rune of Might on a creature when I don't have the bows in play and that creature dies, I can get that back. I think playing Master Scald would be a no-brainer there for me.
Right. That's where I'm at as well. And so I think, you know, the more you get into these sealed pools and the more you start to experiment and do these builds, assuming you get a pool like this that can support the splashing, the decks start to look a bit homogenous, I think.
Yes, right. It's just base green, probably, I mean, blue, red, or black is your second color, depending on what you're given. And then just playing your best cards as much as your mana can support it. And then the other end of that spectrum is if you don't have that or you don't have those quote unquote best cards, just what's the cheesiest streamlined deck you can build that's going to go under those decks? Because once I get to a point in the game, once I have my snow mana up for my Icehide Trolls, or I'm, you know, nugging you every turn with my Turgrid's Lantern, like at a certain point, the mid-range decks can't compete or the aggro decks can't compete.
Right. And so I'm just looking at this deck right now, you know, this deck that we've laid out here for you all. I think almost every card in here is at least B minus level. There are some C pluses floating around, but I think in these multicolored builds, you really want every card to stand on its own. And you're just trying to like jam as many highly graded cards in your deck as possible and still have some defensive speed.
Right. Yeah, that's the one problem with this deck is like I've got 3 2 drops. And that's it. And so defensive speed wise, it's not great. Like I would have liked a little bit more. Like if I had another priest, I would play it. If I had, you know, obviously if I had a Pactmate or something to foretell on to, whatever, like I would love that sort of stuff, but I just didn't get there.
You've got a bunch of 3 mana 2/3s though, which does go a long way as well. Mm-hmm. You know, the triple Icehide Troll and the double Elven Bow, all being reliably castable because you're so heavy green.
Right. And of note here, like we've got a few cantrips, we've got a Glittering Frost, and I'm still playing 18 lands here. And that's largely off the back of just needing enough sources. So hopefully that was somewhat easy to follow along with. And I'm curious to see if you built a different deck. You should throw that at us on Twitter. I'd love to see what other people built out of this pool.
Yeah, for sure. Any parting advice here for people as we head into the Arena Open?
I mean, have fun. Please play it. I mean, if you are part of the Arena economy, I think playing in the sealed event is really important as like voting with your dollars, like letting WotC know that a limited Arena Open is something people want and we want more competitive limited events. So that's one thing I would say. And I really liked your idea of if you're going to be playing best of three and if you make day two, everyone's going to be playing best of three. You should practice doing the multiple build thing at some point before day two in the open.
Yeah, right. And even if your second build is not good, just gaining the experience of doing the sideboarding when it's not of critical importance that you nail it is a valuable experience.
Right. I was playing in one of the best of three ones I did the other day. I was playing against an opponent who was just like 3-2 dot deck. And I hadn't built a second deck, but I knew I sort of had a red black deck in the side. And I had 2 Frostbites and 2 Crush the Weak, the like mini sweeper, the deal 2 to everything. And so I just like had to rapidly sideboard into that deck because I was like, these Frostbites and these Crush the Weaks are going to be insane against this opponent if I can build a deck that supports that. But I only had 2.5 minutes because I didn't do my homework previously. So like Ben said, even if you don't think it's a very good deck or whatever, like building multiple decks or just knowing what your options are post board against different decks is really important with your pool.
Right. And if you don't have unlimited time and you're trying to practice for the event, you're interested in it, you want to try to do well, you know, rather than just posting your sealed pool to Twitter or something and saying, you know, hey, what's the build or whatever, try to build 2 decks. You know, I've had a difficult pool to build, and I built two different decks. One was like a four-color controlling deck. One was a more streamlined blue-red deck, and just put it out into Twitter and posted the two screenshots and said, hey, which do you think is better? And got a lot of thoughtful responses, and I played with both decks. But I learned a lot, too, from just seeing people's responses and, you know, engaging in discussion about Sealed, whether it's in our Discord, on Twitter, wherever.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Great place to wrap us up. Go forth. Good luck in the Arena Open. And be aware as well that Top 1200 Mythic is going to qualify you for an MIQ that is sealed as well. So lots of sweet stuff happening. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
Thank you so much to ChannelFireball.com for sponsoring this podcast. If you're heading over to Channel Fireball for any and all purchases, please use the code LOL when you check out to let them know we sent you there. You can check us out streaming once Ben's internet is back. He'll be back. Twitch.tv/MrMetronome for him. Twitch.tv/LordTupperware for me. We're both on Twitter under those same usernames. And you can tweet at the podcast at Lords of Limited.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at LordsOfLimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week. Ooh, Ben, when are we going to record on Sunday if we're both playing day two of the Open?
Ooh, tough beats.
Tough beats. Yeah, we'll have to see what's going to go on there. But we will be back next week with a full report and more sweet Kaldheim action. We'll catch you there.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.
Through
sorry,
this
I
list.
Got distracted. Oh. There are like people in the building. My students are here. I'm being invaded. Why are my students here on a Sunday? They're like doing something. They're in the choir room. They must be doing something for the musical. Anyway.
Being invaded.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.